Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 140. Jesus, I joined at the right time. This is our rewatch of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We're going to be talking about season 1, episodes 3, The Witch, and 4, Teacher's Pet. My name is Selena, and on this episode are Brittany, Caitlin, and Michal is not your name. Mitch. I already messed it up. I don't know how I did that.
It's M-I, so I got
yeah. It. And the pictures, you know, yeah. Anyway, Mitch is here. Hello, and hello to everyone else. Thank you for joining us. Last week, a whole different panel discussed the pilot and the second episode, The Harvest. So we are going to be talking about that very briefly at the top of the show, just because we've got a couple of newbies here who want to share their initial reactions to the first episode of Buffy. If you want to contact Rewatchable, you can do that one of several ways. You can email us, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, Twitter @re_watchable. This post on hypable.com, which is hypable.com, you can leave your comments there. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So whatever your feelings are on Buffy, whether you're a newbie or an old fan, you can write to us and let us know what you think. Just be sure that you don't spoil our newbies. Very important. So to just start off the show and make sure you can all distinguish our voices, we're going to give a fun fact. And Brittany, why don't you start?
Hi, I'm Brittany. I'm eating a giant bowl of chili because I worked all morning and I'm starving. That's my fun fact.
that's a great fact, and it'll probably explain any noises that might come when you're chewing.
Chew on mute as quickly as possible.
Sounds good. What about you, Caitlin?
My fun fact is that I got a crock pot for Christmas, and I am so excited about it.
What is that?
A slow cooker.
Oh, wow.
That's like the brand of slow cooker.
Okay. I didn't know that. I'm not in the know
about
that.
Nice using that. That's fabulous.
I'm so excited about it.
What's your fun fact, Mitch?
My fun fact is that I currently have a giant Rick Grimes beard. I'm sure you didn't know where that sentence was going.
Awesome. Well, those are all fun. And for mine, I figure that no one really wants to know about me, so I will use this opportunity to give a fun little Buffy fact. Last week, the hosts were kind of complaining about how shows always cast much older people for high school roles, and I thought it would be fun to bring up something that I happen to know, so that's about me, that Sarah Michelle Gellar was actually a teenager when the show started. She was 19 when they shot the pilot. So just in case you didn't know that, now you do. So we're going to move into talking a little bit briefly about our thoughts on the pilot episode, because I know our newbies have some stuff they would like to say.
Well, am I a newbie from the fact that I've already seen season one and in part, well, the first few episodes of season two? It's kind of like, I mean, yeah. But then again, I do kind of have like a somewhat recent reaction to the pilot.
You're like a nuh.
So I guess that the fact that is... I when I first watched the pilot, it was I was trying to be more into it than it would allow me to be, and then eventually it became worse. Like by the time that we get to a certain episode that I'm hoping I get to either write the recap for or beyond for, it completely loses me. There's like one episode that is just complete like irrelevance in the story.
What, like one of these ones or future?
No. We haven't covered it yet. It's up and coming.
Ooh,
Selena, I can
I'm
tell
intrigued.
You what it is from the way that it's in the intro without spoiling anything. It's the part in the intro when Buffy has a knife stabbed next to her head. That episode. If you can think about what that would be. I don't know. It's been a while since you watched Buffy. Maybe someone else out there knows what I'm talking about.
I have
about.
No idea what you're talking about.
You can figure
okay,
it out.
Okay, well, I'll figure it out.
You know what episode I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it was the point where Buffy lost me, and I think I stopped because of that episode later on.
Oh,
I was like, it
okay.
Hasn't gotten better since then. So
okay.
I'm waiting still. I'm waiting for Buffy to get better.
Yeah, well, this time you'll be watching the entire show, so I'm sure that's going to happen at some point. Maybe, or maybe not. We'll see.
No, I'm sticking through it. I'm going to go all the way. I know season 3 is where it gets good, so.
I'm going to have a bit of trouble watching this show. It's so bad. It's, like, so 90s, but, like, I just can't, I don't know. I'm hoping that I can, like, push through and get into it. I think it's going to help because I kind of got more into it by episode 3 because I waited to watch all of them together, like all 4, because I wasn't on last week. And I think like by the time I got halfway through episode 3, I was like, okay, this is how it is. I'm really glad I didn't stop after the pilot because I probably would have written my resignation to Karen. So I don't know how I feel. I'm really not into it yet. It's going to take like a major overhaul to make me like it, I think.
You know, it's always funny when you talk about a show like this and you have to stop after the pilot and judge it because, and I don't know how you guys feel, but I feel like, you know, at this point we've all worked for Hypebeast for a while and I feel like we're sort of intelligent enough and we know enough about pop culture to not judge a show by its pilot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm judging it by 4 episodes at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking them all
yes, as a package.
Because if it was just by the pilot, I wouldn't have even watched the second episode. But I understand, like you were saying, we all work and write for entertainment. The pilot is very heightened, and it has to be that way in order to establish what the show is going to be, and yada, yada, yada. I get all that. I'm not into vampires or the way that these people are portrayed. Like, when I saw, like, the first thing where they go into, like, the cave area and then the voodoo Barbie dolls that we'll talk about, I was like, oh, boy. I don't like supernatural things. So, first of all, that's already taking me out of my comfort zone with this. I'm not, like, a huge, like, I don't really like vampires. I don't like any of that really too much. I've just started reading like more stuff like this, so watching it is like a whole new ball game for me.
So this is a good choice for you to be unrewatchable for.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that it just is, I get into it a little bit more. Worst case scenario, I leave. But yeah, I'm just not into it yet, and I'm hoping that that changes. But like I said, by episode 3, I had kind of settled in and I was like, okay, I know what I'm watching. I know what to expect. I know the type of dialogue that's coming my way. I'm just going to let it flow over me and not pay too much attention to it. Cause I think that's how I have to watch the show. I can't be looking for anything. I just have to watch it and take it at face value for now.
I mean, there are a couple of things that you should take into consideration when you're starting a show like this. I mean, for one, first of all, I don't know if you know this about me. I hate vampires. That could have been my fun fact, actually. I despise vampires, but this is my favorite show. That might tell you a little bit about what the show becomes later on. But, I mean, okay, first of all, the first season, you've all heard people say that the first season of Buffy is terrible. Like, I think the reason that we who are fans, who've seen the whole thing, can appreciate the first season is because we know what it's setting up. Mm-hmm. And we know how consistent these first episodes are in the whole scope of things. It's not like the show resets in season 2, but this was a mid-season replacement on a shoestring budget filmed in the backlot of Warner Brothers, and you can tell. But when that's said, I mean, there are 2 ways you can enjoy this. You can watch the show. You can watch it and you can laugh at it and you can poke fun of the 90s-isms and you can sort of decide that it's stupid and roll your eyes. Or you can, as you say, Brittany, which I think is very clever, is that you can sort of put that on the back burner and enjoy the ride and see where the story takes you. And maybe also remember that the people that love the show, not everyone's going to love the show, but the people that do love the show, they've seen these things too. They pick up on the things that you guys pick up on and they know the bad parts of the show too, but there's still a reason that we're fans. So, I mean, unless maybe you think we have terrible taste in TV and that's fine, but
hey, I'm a fan of Freaks and Geeks. I try my hardest to get people to like it.
And that sounds horrible.
This is only 4 episodes in.
Like, exactly.
I'm just giving my open and honest opinion for 4 episodes. I'm not poo-pooing 7 seasons of Joss Whedon's fantastic work I've heard. So
yeah, just give it time. We'll see how we go on the show, and you can always, like, in season 3, if you're like, oh my god, not another vampire, then There are other shows for you. But I would say that if you, you know, whoever is listening or who is a newbie who is insisting on picking up on the flaws would be depriving themselves of what is ultimately going to be a very rewarding experience. But anyway, we have a lot to get through, so let's get into the actual episodes that we're going to be talking about this week. The first episode is The Witch, and we've got a nice little synopsis here written by Mitch, I believe.
Yeah, this one's
yes. Fine. Okay, great. In this episode, Buffy tries out for the cheerleading team, but soon discovers that a witch may be influencing who makes the cut. After a cheerleader spontaneously combusts, Giles recognizes this as the handiwork of witchcraft. Cordelia is temporarily blinded and nearly Regina George during a driving lesson. The Scooby Gang... has that been said yet? Anyway, confirms that the classmate Amy is the witch, but not before a deadly energy-draining spell is placed on Buffy. The gang, I'm going to assume that's a reference to a previous podcast I was not on, visits Amy's house, revealing that her mother swapped bodies with Amy to relive the glory days of her pubescent cheerleader ventures. At a basketball game, Giles starts a counterspell to Mrs. Madison's extreme displeasure. Willow is sucker punched in the face, Sander is force choked, and Buffy is nearly axed in the face before the body swap is reversed. Amy's mom is sent to live the rest of her days as a sports trophy, giving Amy the bliss of her father's parentage and the sweet gooiness of unlimited brownies. That's perfect. I have nothing to add to that.
This is a very dramatic reading.
Trying to make it exciting.
I thought about how Selena would read it, and I kind of, like, every once in a while get into a mode where, like, I want to write this for, like, the narrator. Mm-hmm. It's fun, because, like, I just feel like the sweet gooiness of unlimited brownies was, like, the perfect Selena line, because that's something that you would say in normal life, too.
That's something I would say in normal life, and that's because I've watched so much Buffy, because that's such a Buffy line.
It really is.
That's very funny. It's very, I appreciate that. So let's get into talking a little bit about this episode. And now, obviously, after the pilot and the harvest last week, this doesn't really seem like they're that important. But I actually think, I just want to say here at the start that especially The Witch has more relevance to the overall mythology of the show than newbies might immediately realize. So that's just something worth keeping in mind when we talk about it. But we are going into the quote-unquote monster of the week theme. And what do we think about the witch being the first non-vampire quote-unquote monster that we encounter?
Well, I love a good crime of the week structure. So I wasn't sure what to expect going into episode three because Welcome to Hellmouth and The Harvest were kind of like this, what felt more like a mid-season finale of a show. Like something that should have, like something that would have been built up to all season. So it was I didn't know where Buffy was going to go. If they were like, if it was like this huge, like drawn out, like, you know, drama, like with just focusing on that, or if it was going to be a monster of the week thing. Cause I know next to nothing about Buffy. So when I saw this episode, I was like, oh, we are going to be into a monster of the week type of thing. Like, we're not going to be dealing with, sure, there are going to be recurring problems and, like, you know, larger story arcs, kind of like working in the B story background. But for an A story every week, like, we're going to have a witch here and we're going to have a demon here, probably a demon. I'm not sure. I'm sure they pop up every now and then. But yeah, I was happy it wasn't a vampire, I guess, because it kind of challenges Buffy in a different way. So you kind of see, like, oh, it's not just going to be Buffy versus a vampire every week. Like, she's going to be out of her element a little bit sometimes, and she still has a lot to learn and stuff like that. So I like it. You know, I'm always down with a good person of the week or crime of the week or anything like that. I love procedural, so this is good for me.
That is good, and I think that's something that Buffy maybe doesn't get enough credit for because people are too distracted by the hair and the special effects, but in the early seasons especially, I mean, it does do monster of the week stuff fairly well, balancing that it's always about the characters, you know, whether it's about Buffy or it's about Xander or it's about Willow. The main monster sometimes maybe a little too much, but it always sort of comes back to reflect whatever the characters are going through at that particular time. And I think that's another reason why an episode like The Witch feels like it matters more in the larger scope of things, because the characters hit some beats this week or this episode that will resonate through the show. So you are looking at a Monster of the Week episode, but you're also looking at a piece of a puzzle. And I think it did that really well. I don't know if you agree, Caitlin.
Yeah, I think especially in the early going, the Monster of the Week format is really important in that it's setting up the universe that the story is taking place in. So we know that vampires are a thing. Okay, well, where are the limits then? You know, what does exist, what doesn't exist, if vampires get to exist? So by exploring different things like witches and giant praying mantises, like we see, we start seeing where the limits are, and we see what we can maybe expect to see in the future, and then maybe where there are some lines drawn. So I think it's important to establish the boundaries of the world early on, and the Monster of the Week format is good for that.
Yeah, that's a good point. But it's also a very bold move to introduce a show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and two episodes in, they go, oh, by the way, no vampires this week. Did that feel jarring to anyone? Or was it kind of like, oh, okay, well, there are other types of monsters. Buffy the Monster Slayer.
Well, in the pilot, there's that scene with Giles, like, piling the books on her. Like, all the different kinds of monsters. So it seems like it fits, to me, anyway.
Are you going to say something?
Well, I mean, to me, it came as a bit of a shock because I was more expecting, I don't know, like straight up Vampire Diaries for at least a bit before like the werewolves were introduced in like, I don't know, season two. Like, I feel like if you have a show
spoilers.
Named The Vampire Slayer, the Vampire Diaries Slayer, sorry. Whatever. You got what I meant there. But regardless, I feel like if you have a show named Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you should keep to vampires at least for like your first 13 episodes, and then have it be like a big shocking revelation that there's other creatures out there. Because that always seemed to do really well for me when, I don't know, like you could even go as far as to say like in Twilight when they don't introduce wolves until New Moon, it's exactly like the hints toward them and whatnot, but they're not there until that. And it just seems silly to bring in a witch all of a sudden. And I know it makes sense in this universe, and it just fit organically. I think that they were kind of just, I don't know, if perhaps shooting blanks or shooting into missing a barn wall with a shot or something of that phrase, where I just feel like they didn't exactly hit their mark there with me. Like they had no one else to follow through with. They had no example, so they tried, and I commend them for that. But I think this was too early, and other shows have learned from that mistake.
Yeah, and that also depends on what you want Buffy to be, because obviously in the larger scope of things, witchcraft and magic is a bit of a recurring theme, and it does sort of go hand in hand with the vampire and demon slaying. You see both, that you see Giles sort of be like, okay, well, we need a spell to defeat this witch, and that's sort of a recurring thing. But I do think that that's a good point. Like, it all depends on how they set up the show. And obviously the fact that, again, this was a mid-season replacement and Warner Brothers were giving Joss Whedon and his team a certain set of... Oh, hold on. Okay, they weren't going for me. We're okay. the Warner Brothers were giving Joss Whedon a formula to go like, okay, well, can you please make this more... week-to-week basis, and this is what he came up with, but it does tie into the larger mythology, I think. But again, it's something that when you watch it for the first time, totally understandable that you might go, well, you know, who is this Amy person, and why should I care about this? But what it does do in here at the very top of the show, and I think this is actually something that Buffy also does very well, is that not only does it subvert your expectation because you introduce a show about vampires and third episode you go boom witches, but it also introduces this concept of a vampire slayer, and one of the first thing it does is take away her powers in a way. Like, she's this powerful pow punch girl who punches the bad guys in the face, and then they're going, okay, but now she has no powers. What that does is it establishes the importance of the team around her. And it gives Xander and Willow and Giles a chance to help out in a way that I think is more significant than it would have done if Buffy had just been fighting another bunch of vampires. What do you guys think about that? seeing them work together.
Yeah, I appreciated that. And like I was saying before, like the fact that you're showing like this whole different side of Buffy so early on, like that she still has all the, like, yeah, she just came from this other place where she had all these powers and she's trying to like move on and like, you know, like she understands what she has to do, but when she's faced with something that she doesn't know how to do, she has to like kind of like, you know, quickly fall back on these new friends that she just made. And I was kind of curious, like, how are like Willow and Xander going to fit into this larger scope? And I did also appreciate the fact that they were let in the loop really quickly. Like, it wasn't like, oh, we're hiding the fact that you're a vampire slayer, like for like 13 or 14 episodes. And then all of a sudden it's like a big reveal. Like, I like that we have the team right from the get go and like showing what they're each good at. Like Willow can hack into any, like the coroner's office. I think that's in the next episode though. But you know, like stuff like that, like she can get into the school databases and she gets really excited about that. And Xander is there for comic relief, but he's also like, you know, he can hold his own sometimes.
Good at getting smacked in the face.
Yeah.
That's a skill.
Yeah. So I appreciated them like building those characters through having Buffy not have her powers. So we're kind of like seeing them step up in different roles in this early on. So that way, you know, like later on, like you were saying, that this episode kind of comes like is important because I can see that later on, like, oh, we're going to think back to like, oh, remember in episode 3, like Xander's good at this or like Willow's good at this.
Yeah.
And you have those kind of established, like, in hyperbole a little bit, because it is early on in the series and they need to, like, you know, build this mold for these characters to try and fit into. And they get more detailed as they go along, but like they're doing that groundwork early on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they're already adapting and changing to this world. Like, you already see that Willow and Xander are finding and negotiating their place, and Giles is just totally lost because this was not the Slayer he had expected. and they are sort of adapting to this world that is surprising to all of them. And you're right, that's a good example of that. So I have a note here in the doc that says, the cheerleader that spontaneously combusted sure did take a while to realize it. I take it that's your way of slightly critiquing the special effects or the reactions that the other people have to this world, Mitch?
I think, yeah, we're in the middle of a special effect and side actor conflict there, because neither were, I mean, maybe she just didn't know when she was supposed to light on fire when they were, you know, having her act out the scene or whatever. It just, like, if you're on fire and you see smoke, you can't be that concentrated in your performance that you won't see it. And I just kind of roll my eyes whenever I see that scene. So I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, you know, you don't feel the heat at least. Nothing. It took her a good 15 seconds until, like, Buffy actually tackles her to actually realize what's going on. And I find that to be really stupid.
I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen anyone catch fire. This is very morbid, but like, you know, if your sleeve catches fire, like, people don't not realize for a long time, and then they're like, oh my god. So I think it's a combination of just that she didn't see her, like, she didn't see any part of herself that was covered in flames, and also they had a very expensive special effect that they wanted to make sure the audience appreciated. So I think it's a bit of both. Another special effect that was pretty crappy this week was Cordelia's white contact lenses.
Yeah, that was interesting.
That's pretty funny, looking back on it now. And you say you thought that maybe Cordelia would be blind forever?
Yeah, I thought about it as if I was watching this episode for the first time. The fact that I don't think we see a resolution to it. She just, like, can see later on, and they don't mention the fact that she's giving back her sight. Maybe it's even the next episode. I don't know if she shows up again in this episode. I could be wrong. But regardless, it just didn't seem like to be a big deal to anyone that she wasn't able to see. They were like, oh, well, she'll be fine. She'll get a seeing eye dog or something. Whatever. Moving on. Like, everyone in this world is so nonchalant about the horrible things that happen. Like, it's just really strange that all the people that are at least underneath Amy's mom's spell in this episode just, like, you know, continue on as normal after. They're just like, okay, whatever. Like, we're just going to have more cheerleading tryouts after that one girl just almost died from being burned alive magically.
Did you know that that's how cheerleading works, Mitch?
It must. I mean, just see Bring It On, so.
Well, I mean, I will say that is addressed to a certain degree, whether or not you think that is enough. I will definitely say that the show is very aware of Sunnydale residents' very high, very good ability to look away from these horrible things that are happening around them. But I will actually say that something that's very interesting about Buffy for me watching it again is that this actually, the first season obviously premiered in 1997, and the first Harry Potter book came out in 1997. And I feel like there are things when I watch the show that I'm like, oh my God, they stole it, but they can't have because they came out at the same time. So I'm like, they literally just had some of the same ideas at the same time. And one of the things that Joss Whedon and J.K. Rowling sort of mind-melded about was this idea of this world existing right on top of another world, and somehow people were just unable to notice it. This is, I mean, Sunnydale residents are just muggles not able to see magic. And that's kind of the same thing. And I feel like that's how I look at it, and that they are, it's happening on the edges of their vision, and they are kind of like, well, I can't, my brain can't deal with this. This is not logical. This is not natural. I must repress, you know, as a storytelling device. However well it works is up to you to decide, but I think it's very similar to the muggle thing. And I think if we give that a pass, then the Sunnydale residents get a pass in my book too.
So does that, so that never goes away, and it's kind of just like there are like select few muggles that learn of it. I'm melding too many series here, like in the Vampire Diaries, where like Sheriff Forbes is like part of like the vampire hiding secrecy committee or whatever. So like that kind of stuff goes on, and it's not like just like the Scooby Gang and that's it. Or like no once comment. You know, you're automatically initiated into the Scooby Gang. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, no comment. Keep watching, okay. I will say. But one thing that you are absolutely right about is that Buffy could not have been more obvious that she was taking hair from Amy's brush. You are right, Mitch. But at least Amy did realize it, you know, because I was watching this episode again and I was like rolling my eyes, like, did she really not? But then she told, or Madison told her daughter, she was like, oh, and Buffy just sneaking around stealing my hair. That kind of made up for it, I think. She's not as sneaky as she thinks she is.
And well, it's funny, too, because it's like, what can she do in class? I mean, then again, she did seal someone's mouth, weirdly. Maybe that was like a missed spell. Like, she was trying to aim toward Buffy, and she knew what was going on.
I think so she couldn't cheer. Like, it was just like, she took Cordelia's sight, and she took that other cheerleader's mouth, and, you know.
Right, so she was a cheerleader. I was asking, too, if I missed that. So that was meant to be a cheerleader there.
Yeah. so moving on to something that I think is hysterical but also super cringy is super hyper cheerleader Buffy, who sings Macho Man and has a total freak out in the gym. What did you guys think of that?
That was cute.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty great. When she came down for, like, the orange juice in the morning, I'm like, what is going on here? And then another thing I could not get over was, like, the pink eyeshadow just in, like, the corners of her eyes. It, like, cuts off so drastically. But that also combined with her, like, prancing around and getting orange juice. And then she just, like, takes the orange juice, the cup that's being, like, filled away, and it's just, like, pouring on the counter. And her mom's like, meh, whatever. She's like, clean that up. That's sticky.
Yeah.
Her ponytail. She's got, like, the high pony, and she's, like, bouncing her head, and the pony's bouncing with her.
I love it, too. And, like, you have to wonder, like, if not for all of the dark secret Slayer stuff, if she would not be a little bit more like that. You know, this is, like, Buffy trying to be what she was, and that whole hyper-happy thing, maybe a reflection of that. But it also just was just very, very funny comic relief, and showing that Sarah Michelle Gellar is not just the angsty teenager, you know? And also, again, this gave, like, Sandra and Willow and Giles some chance to be hilarious and also to help save the day, which I appreciated.
Yeah, and it was cute, too, like, the fact that Willow is... I feel like I'm sort of already starting to see a theme just with this one episode. She's going to be, like, kind of the cunning human, kind of like Han Solo was in the original trilogy, like, the one that can just,
oh, yeah,
like,
she's exactly like Han Solo.
Yeah. And I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Working what you got.
So did anyone else, or did anyone put together that this was, because obviously this is a twist in an age where we've all seen every twist in the book because every show has done it since then, but did you guys notice that she was doing a body swap, but was that a surprise?
It was a surprise for me because I was kind of like doing something else while I was watching this episode. So when I like focused back in, I was like, wait a minute, what's going on? We're like Freaky Friday-ing here. Yeah, but it didn't occur to me until for quite some time. But this is a running trend, Selena, you'll catch on. I tend to like not notice things are coming for a while. So most plot twists, no matter how repetitive, are usually lost on me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm always going to be surprised.
Well, that's good. I appreciate that. But, I mean, for me, it was kind of funny because I don't see this coming. Like, I've watched this episode like 3 or 4 times before I started remembering, oh yeah, she's the mom, because it is kind of set up really well. And it's also another thing that Buffy does well, is that it makes sure that nothing is exactly as it seems. Kind of like we'll get to next episode as well. Like, they'll set up something and it'll kind of be what you think it is, but not really. And I thought the actress who played the mom, like the actual mom, the body mom, she was really good, actually. So I thought they pulled that off really well.
Well, I think it also works because the swap happens partway through.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh no, it happened right at the big, like from the beginning, right?
Well, why would Amy have been so bad at the tryouts if it is because
she's still getting used to the body. I think it happened. Didn't she say? Amy, like the mom Amy that she had, like she woke up a couple of months ago in her mom's bed.
I thought Amy was the Amy at the tryouts, and then
I'm pretty sure she's the mom the whole way through, but we can have our listeners clarify this for us. But I'm pretty sure she's the mom the whole way.
That just seems weird that she would have been really terrible at the tryouts if.
Definitely. I think that's true. I always just read that as her being. And not having full control over her mom's body. Cause she made a comment like, oh, I just can't get it to move like my mom's body moved. So I reckon that was her mom just saying, why doesn't my daughter's body work as well as mine?
Though if she'd had months, you'd think she would have been rehearsing in her daughter's body.
I don't know. I've tried getting in shape before.
I was like, oh, she switched when she realizes her daughter is terrible at this.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe.
Because she sucked at the tryouts, but...
Yeah. I'm pretty sure she has that comment about it being months, but we'll let our listeners clarify that for us. So another question that Mitch brought up, which is a good question that I'm not going to answer, is does Giles have some sort of magical power, or is anyone able to read a spell out of a book? I think that will be answered somewhere down the line, but good. I like this question. And that was a comment. Now we know where that one screaming woman shot in the show's intro comes from. And I thought this was a hilarious comment because I keep thinking this is Willow. Like, no matter how many times I watch the show, when I see that shot, I think it's Willow. And like,
but she looks blonde in that shot from the
lighting. I think she looks red, redhead. But it's like because it's so bright. This is the dress all over again.
In the intro from this episode.
Yeah, actually. But I just think it's so funny because it doesn't matter. Like, I will forget that it's not Willow every time. And then I'll be like, oh, yeah. So, yeah, random. And poor Amy's mom. I mean, as horrible as she was, she got stuck in a trophy. And she's going to be spending the rest of her days as a living trophy. And that's a pretty terrible fate.
Or will she?
Yeah. As far as we know right now, that is her eternal fate. Was that too rough? Is that an appropriate ending? Is that harsh?
Yeah.
Fate worse than death, doll? In my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's true. It's a revenge for how she hurt all those Barbie dolls. She gets to be one herself.
Hey, listen. I used to rip off the Barbie heads dolls in the bathtub and, like, as a kid and like play like basketball with them and try and like get them in the toilet, Jesus. And then I'd flush them. So like,
you're like that kid from Toy Story. That was the evil one, Mitch. You know that, right?
I'm a little bit sad as a kid. I have to admit, I was really distracted about toys. I don't know what it was.
Mitch,
that's terrifying.
I know, it's like sad though, because like nowadays, like I would honestly collect Barbie dolls and love it. But then I just had like this weird denial that just made me like hate them. It was really strange.
Imagine how many cheerleaders are walking around with heads flushed down the toilet right now. You should be ashamed of yourself.
I like that correlation.
Moving on now to our favorite scenes from The Witch. Caitlin, which was yours?
I chose the conversation between Buffy and her mom, where her mom comes in and is just like, I don't get it. I've decided that there's just no way I can understand you. And I like this scene because it kind of really helps establish their relationship. And it seems like there's a lot of love there, but a lot of confusion doubled by Buffy's other life. And, you know, I think it sets up what can be an intriguing relationship as we go forward.
Definitely. And Brittany, what about you?
Mine is just like Giles getting really excited over all these new challenges like that pop up, because I'm pretty sure he's my favorite character right now. And like when Buffy's like, oh, you know, like I think it's a witch, and he's like, woo, all right, I got a book for that somewhere, like let's get into it. Like, I just like his enthusiasm, even though, like, you know, the world is ending. He's like, well, new challenge. Yes.
It's one of the things I love best about Giles.
The older I get, the more I relate to Giles.
Me too. Oh, my God. And Mitch, what about you?
My favorite scene is when Buffy's just being that super cheerleader. And she's so cute. Like, I love Sarah Michelle Gellar trying to, like, let go a little bit, because she's so uptight as this character. But when she finally gets the chance to like have fun, especially this episode, just in general trying out for cheerleading, it made me so happy. And I loved when she kicks that one girl or throws her. It's just like it's perfect, because it's just like, nothing to see here, kids, keep moving along. She just has superhuman strength.
Yeah, that's one of the things that, to be honest, I enjoy most too, is getting when Buffy gets to light up for whatever reason, are some of my favorite parts of the show. And but my favorite scene is actually, I alluded to this a little bit earlier, is the scene where they're in the library. That's going to be a recurring thing. And Willow sort of establishes the gang as, you know, she says, you're like the Slayer and we're like the Slayerettes. And that is kind of, for me, I mean, obviously it's a very iconic moment, but it's also just a turning point moment for all four of them, really, because this is when Willow and Xander could have chosen to walk away. You know, they are not in this fight, really. They just happened to be with Buffy when that whole thing with Luke went down. And Xander obviously has his own reasons for sticking around, not only the whole Buffy crush, but also because of Jesse, something that, you know, is clearly affecting him way more than it affected Willow, who was like, Jesse who? but Willow, you know, she wants to help. She is really, really attaching herself to Buffy at this point, and Giles is letting them, and they become this group, and I really like that. I think it's very important. So that was cute. And moving on to our favorite lines. Caitlin, do you want to go first?
Mine was Xander after the cheerleading list goes up, and he's like, you guys are alternates! And they're like, oh, that's not a good thing. And Xander's like, for I am Xander, king of Cretans. May all lesser Cretans bow before me.
Oh, Xander. Jesus. Oh, poor Xander. He's so clueless. And Mitch, I'll let you go next.
Sure, mine's also a Xander line, and it's like totally ripped off of Lion King. I don't know which came first, but it's
Buffy did. Let's oh no, Lion
and
King
I hide
did.
Until it goes away. Was Lion King after?
No, Lion King was first.
Okay, so I think it had to have been an allusion to that, like the elephant graveyard scene, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. It would be like Buffy to make a pop culture reference after all. And speaking of pop culture references, Brittany.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's for me. when Xander's talking about the combustion cheerleader, he's just like, it's like the Human Torch, only it hurts.
Uh-huh. That is funny. Xander, oh my gosh, Xander has like almost all the lines this week. I do like, by the way, that line from Mitch, I laugh in the face of danger, then I hide until it goes away, because if there's one thing that sums up Xander's character, it's that line. But but my line is actually Giles, who, you know, like Caitlin, is becoming more and more my favorite character as the years goes on, and kind of alludes to Brittany's favorite moment too. It's his line, that's the thrill of living on a hellmouth. There's a veritable cornucopia of fiends and devils and ghouls to engage. And then they all turn and look at him like he's crazy, and he goes, well, pardon me for finding the glass half full. And I love it. I love this whole thing with Giles. You know, he comes into this world and he's expecting a slayer who's ready to fight vampires, and he gets this teenage girl who wants to be a cheerleader. And yeah, he does do his thing to make life exciting. I like it.
His monologue at the beginning of the episode is also so good.
Yes. Yes. And again, you know, things are not what they appear, and this is the perfect example. So Buffy's little stint with cheerleading ends as soon as it begins, and we move into episode 4, Teacher's Pets. The synopsis for this episode is, in this episode, Xander can't keep it in his pants when he sees that praying mantis booty. The only teacher that didn't think Buffy was a convict is decapitated, and a 90s version of a foxy substitute teacher named Miss Natalie French fills in. Conveniently, a Wolverine-like vampire is haunting around town, serving as a red herring to Dr. Gregory's murder. When Buffy sees Miss French's head turn 180 degrees, her and Giles put it together that she must be a murderous shape-shifting giant bug, because duh. In the meantime, Miss French asks her class to help her make egg displays for the school science fair. Xander and another classmate take the bait and are nearly decapitated after mating with the giant bug. Buffy arrives via the Wolverine vamp's guidance, stakes him, and uses a recording of Bat Sonar/Giles to disable Miss French. Before either of the boys are killed, Buffy chops the pedophilic teacher into tiny bits, and all is well. Or is it? Dun, dun, dun. The final shot shows the eggs Miss French made with Dr. Gregory stirring underneath their desk. Dot, dot, dot. So, another creature of the week, a giant praying mantis substitute teacher. How do we feel about this?
I was having horrible grasshopper jungle flashbacks this whole episode.
It's the music.
Because it was almost like, I think that book ripped this episode off.
Very possibly. And what an episode to rip off, right? Of yeah. All the things they could have chosen. Yeah. This is a little bit dumb. I will be the first to admit that. But the episode, from a character point of view, is actually really great. It does some good things for Xander's character, I think. But starting a bit earlier from the ish beginning, you know, we are already kind of seeing a pattern of Buffy not being allowed to have nice things, because as soon as she meets a teacher she likes that isn't Giles, he is violently murdered. How do we feel? Are we mourning Dr. Gregory?
It was sad.
It was kind of sad.
It was a good conversation they had. She thought it was going to be so horrible, and then he was just like, let's make him eat that transcript. Like, oh, you're so good. And so, of course, nobody can have nice things in Sunnydale.
I was, like, oddly affected by Dr. Gregory's death, because he looked like Santa Claus, and he was really nice, and at the end, you know, they had that moment with his glasses. It's kind of like, this is a super random comparison, but it reminded me of Friends in that episode where Mr. Heckles dies, and they're all, like, super sad for him, and I'm like, oh. So I did think that was a little bit sad, of all the people that die.
You had, like, Mr. Feeny potential here.
Who's that?
Oh, from Boy Meets World.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Busted. I've never seen that. So in this episode, Angel makes a glorious return. He gives Buffy a trendy leather jacket, totally ripping off Poe Dameron, by the way, wink, wink. And he also gives her this tip of a supposedly super horrible, terrible, frightening Wolverine vampire roaming town. And what I love about this, and I'll let you guys say what I'm sure you love about it too, is that this is so Angel, that he's like all mysterious and all like ripped apart by this vampire, and this is the great new big thing. And Buffy like takes that thing apart in 2 seconds. And I just love that, because, you know, it also shows that it's not that straightforward with these monsters. Like, you don't just get Angel introducing a new threat and then she goes out and fights the new threat and that's the episode. So I actually thought that was really cool.
I just love how unhelpful he is.
Yeah, exactly.
He has like this long description of what the threat is, but he can't just come out and say, there's a vampire with a claw for a hand. Uh-huh. You might want to watch out. He's like, there's a threat out there. And like, okay, thanks, Angel. Thank you.
He tries very, very hard to be dark and mysterious. Definitely.
He's so maddeningly unhelpful, and I love him.
What do you guys think about Angel at this point? I mean, there's not much to think yet, but...
Well, there seems to be, like, a great distaste, doesn't there, Britt? Like, already? Do you feel it?
What?
No, I like him.
Amongst fandom, not us.
I'm talking, in general.
Like, whenever I talk to superfans, just, like, at random over the years, like, Angel is usually their, like, least favorite character because they compare him to, like, Edward Cullen.
Oh, my God. Please what? Don't.
Who are you talking to?
I have never met these fans, and I don't think I want to.
I also didn't know that Angel was its own show. Until we started talking about doing Buffy on Rewatchable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, he's like one of those characters where when he pops up, you're like, oh, I should pay attention to him. Because mm-hmm. he's brooding in a corner. And it's like Zuko all over again, Caitlin. I'm like, do I pay attention to this man in the corner?
This very handsome man riddles? In the corner.
Mm-hmm.
With no face paint. This time around, though, I don't know. I'm into it. Like, the first time I watched this first season, I was a little bit eye-rolling because I was watching it with a super fan who really was eye-rolling at him. So you can get affected by that pretty easily.
Right, of course.
But now I'm just like, okay, whatever. I never pronounced his name right. It's Boreanaz?
Boreanaz,
David
yeah.
Boreanaz? Yeah, he's just sexy. It's okay.
He's super sexy. Yeah,
it's
sure.
fine. He can Edward Cullen her all he wants. I know that, yeah, there's some specific like actual Edward Cullen moments that he does later, it, like legitimate. And it's I can see where Stephanie Meyer got her inspiration from his more stalkerish attitudes because they're really alike there. And I can't believe you don't see that quite yet, Selena and Caitlin. A certain scene coming up.
Mitch.
Well, first of all, we haven't gotten to that in the show, so we're not going to talk about anything that happens later, but I am definitely not going to be caught dead comparing Angel to Edward Cullen, because there's no... You'll see later. There's no real comparison there. But you know what? Who you would be in super good company with if you're going to diss Angel is Xander, who... who is very busy vying for Buffy's affections himself. He dreams of... And this is actually very funny because this dream sequence is kind of gender swapping the roles back to what you might initially assume they would be. You've got the damsel in distress and you've got the sexy leading man and he gets to play the guitar. But obviously that's very funny to us because that's not what the show is, because Xander's useless and Buffy is powerful and amazing. So poor Xander sees Buffy talking to this handsome stranger and kind of fails in all he does in this episode. Do you feel bad for Xander?
I do. And I find him relatable because I think that he's just like, I don't even know, not smart, not really good at like hunting creatures. And he wants to be. He mm-hmm. wants to be all these things. And it's funny that like he has all the opportunity to probably like become a good power couple with Willow if only he would like give her the time of day. And it's I almost don't feel bad for him from the fact that he's so oblivious. But Willow, then again, I get it because
– yeah.
I mean, it's not his fault that he's just not so smart. It's okay.
He's a teenage boy.
He's a teenage boy. And, like, that's the thing about Xander is that it's very, very easy to have strong opinions about Xander and about all the characters. But ultimately, like, he's not there for the audience's, like, wish fulfillment. He's there to be a teenage boy for all the good and bad that entails. And in this episode, obviously, we get to see some of the worst things that entails. So Miss French comes into play. She is obviously evil from the first moment she comes on screen, but of course the boys all miss that because she wraps them around her finger. So, I mean, you put a point here in the doc, Mitch, that asks, you know, is anyone else concerned at the school that she is very, very clearly flirting with these underage boys and inviting them to her house? But to be honest with you, I just don't think they know. You know, like, I just don't think this is on any official radar. And even if Mr. Flutie found out, like, he would completely be unable to handle that. Because he's, you know, not very good at that stuff.
He gets flustered very easily.
Yeah.
He's also just really dealing with trying to get Buffy into counseling right now.
I know.
He's got like a one-track mind.
Mr. Flutie, I think he's so funny. I think like he's just the best. Like even in the pilot episode, he's all ready to be excited for her, and then he reads her transcript. He like tapes it together. I think it's just the best thing ever.
I love that moment.
Yeah. So Miss French sort of lures Sander into her lair, and Buffy begins to suspect it, and Sander kind of throws the whole angel thing into her face, kind of setting up that tension very nicely. And he feels the need to lie to Miss French about being a virgin, which you should never do, young teenagers listening to us. And he's pressured into drinking and taken down into her sex dungeon. Now there's your comparison, if you ever there ever was one. And luckily for us, there was a MacGuffin that turned out to be very useful in this episode, because Buffy uses the Wolverine vampire to lead her to Miss French. And I think this was a really good twist, because we had this whole super like over dramatic introduction of this clawed vampire who was like a servant of the master, and ultimately he ended up being like a guide dog for Buffy. You know, like he just ended up being super easy to defeat, and really, you know, Buffy just used him to face a far more personal foe, if you will. And of course we had that hilarious moment of them going to the actual Miss French's house. And a quote that I just love, even though it's not my favorite, was when Buffy goes like, "Oh, how are we ever going to find the real Miss French?" And she goes like, "No, dear, I'm right here." It's little moments like that just make all the giant bugs worth it, in my opinion. So it all ends, and feel free to jump in if you have any points about what happens. But Sander's locked in a cage. And I'm sure it's actually funny, because you know what, one of the things, you know, Joss Whedon is so like ragged on for Avengers, and people are like, oh, and he locked Black Widow in a cage. But here at this point in time, he is locking Sander in a cage. Not Buffy, not Willow.
And the other alpha male.
But alpha males, this is the male versions, not the female versions. I really appreciate stuff like that when it's, and it's not even made a big deal in the episode. It's just like, yeah, these are male versions and this is a female predator, and that's just how it is, you know?
Well, you know,
Blade
go ahead, Caitlin.
I was gonna say Blade made a big deal out of it when they find out.
I know. That was almost my favorite line, was when Xander's like, "Shut up, Blaine."
Yeah.
It just felt so right.
Well, not to like jump too far into Ultron, because that's kind of a hot mess, but just to go into the fact that people don't like that Black Widow was taken, I think the comparison can be made here in Whedonverse that he only has the human taken captive, not a person of a specific gender. I think it was an unfortunate circumstance that it happened to be Black Widow, from the fact that she's been so jilted from the beginning in all of
and she's the only female and all that
the Marvelverse. But I think that that's to Whedon, he was just completely oblivious to the fact that although he can, you know, create such a kick-ass female lead, he didn't understand that putting a woman that's been, you know, put down a lot by, you know, marketing and et cetera, not having her own movie, putting her in the cage would feel like such a big deal. But I mean, now seeing this, I can get where he's coming from, but I can see how, I mean, it's kind of like Xander, like, you know, you didn't know better, and I can't help but feel bad for you, because you're messing things up by being dumb.
Yeah. Are you saying Joss Whedon is Xander? That's a...
You know, I think you could say he might be projecting a bit here.
Perhaps. And
this is his teenage self.
Yeah. So anyway, Buffy comes in and saves the day, because that's what Buffy does. And she plays the recording of jazz. I will never not think that this is the funniest thing in the world. And that doesn't help. But enough. Luckily, they get the right side of the recording to play the bat sounds, and she squishes it all up, but Sander gets his moment. He gets to crush the eggs, which is awesome. But then we find out, you know, the final scene, it sort of pans down from Mr. Gregory's jacket, and we see some other eggs that are beginning to hatch, and we're left with the question, is this going to be a big deal later on? Caitlin, can we answer this?
Do you think it will be, newbies?
It was a little bit convenient.
I think it'll be like a little like background like nod to the fans who've paid attention. Like you'll just see like they'll be in science class one day and they'll just be like a grasshopper walking by outside or something like that. And everyone's just oblivious.
And I can kind of imagine this being like kind of a cabin in the woods moment where, you know, all the creatures just kind of come up all at once.
Uh-huh. Oh, right.
And
so
then,
it's like one
know,
of them.
Then they're just kind of like in the background and we have to like look for like the giant praying mantises and we'll be like, oh, they did get out. And like I'd even like read a lot. I would read fan fiction about like what these praying mantis did. I'm sure there has to be a lot.
You would read
and
giant mantis
kind of interesting, cause it's like setting a plot from this creature of the week bill deal that you know, it makes it a little bit less silly to me. It makes it more weighted.
Mm, yeah. And I think I honestly, more than anything else, I think this moment is sort of meant to imply that, I mean, Buffy and her friends are going to do what they can, but at the end of the day, the threats are not going to go away. Like they haven't, they think sometimes, you know, they think they've defeated this great evil and you're kind of left thinking, okay, but I mean, there's still lots of evils. And even though they think they've made this big win and they've, eradicated Miss Natalie French and her eggs, then, you know, they might not have succeeded as well as they thought they had. And there's still lots of danger in the school and in the world. So to wrap up before we get into our favorite scenes from this episode, I just want to know, now that we've seen four episodes and we sort of have a bit of a routine established, we have our core team, we have Giles and Buffy and Xander and Willow, how do we feel about the four of them navigating through this world?
Kind of like I said earlier, I appreciate the fact that they're already working together in this capacity, mm-hmm. and that we don't have to like wait and try to like, you know, like who's gonna find out? Is Willow gonna find out first? Is Xander gonna find out first? But that they're already like jumping into their roles and kind of establishing like, oh, Xander still likes Buffy and he's distracted by Angel, but he's also oblivious to Willow. And like, he does appreciate that they're helping him. So he's that kind of guy. And then you have Willow, who's like, you know, the brains of most of the operation, but she's going to get her moment in the sun one day instead of just hacking into computers. So like, you're looking out for that. And I really like the combination that they've set up. And I hope that they develop well over the next couple of more episodes.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Mitch?
I like, and I just know that they're called this from Teen Wolf fandom, oddly enough, the Scooby Gang. I think that they're really fun. I really like Allison Hannigan. Doesn't she play Willow?
Yeah.
Is that her? I think it's great because she has such a genuine quality to herself, not even just as an actress, but just as a person. So you really get into, like, you know, Willow's struggle here to get Xander to notice her and then to try and be cool and all that. And I'm hoping that Cordelia comes kind of into it because I feel like she has great potential to be, if not in my mind, Buffy's love interest, her best friend. Because I can't help it, just like when she's, you know, being saved by Buffy and by the bus, she like sees the decapitated head and whatnot. She just seems to always kind of get involved in all this, and it seems to, it's really convenient that she just happens to show up in all this, and I'm interested to see more of her because she Caitlin reminds me a lot of what Lydia was in the beginning of Teen Wolf, and I like that comparison because I love Lydia, and I'm really hoping to learn to love Cordelia for the woman she presented herself as, or teen, in the first pilot episode when she's being nice to Buffy and she's, you know, giving her the coolness quiz, and that was cute. I really liked that kind of Lydia-Allison relationship they had going on already.
Mm-hmm. If Tumblr had been around when Buffy first aired, people would be shipping Buffy and Cordelia like crazy. Like, that's such an obvious thing, like, for the Tumblr sort of community. Like, they would, absolutely, they would jump on that.
No, it is the new, it is the new Zutara, and I think you even know what that is, Caitlin, Selena, having not even seen anything of Atla by now. And if
probably.
You didn't, then I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
I'm so offended that you would compare anything to Zutara's love at this point. It's still a fresh wound.
definitely, you're right. I mean, Cordelia is an intriguing presence in the show at this point, and it's obviously already clear that no character is just one thing, and Cordelia is no exception. But I think, you know, and one thing that I sort of wanted to bring up about the core team too, which is kind of a rebuttal to something they talked about last week, is I'm sure you've all noticed that they all have these very unique names. You know, we have Buffy and Cordelia and Willow and Xander and Giles. And first of all, like, I think I just want to point out the irony of a group of Harry Potter fans laughing about the name Sander when their favorite characters are called Hermione and Draco and Neville and stuff. But okay. I think, you know, the thing about the names, aside from obviously building a world and establishing characters that are unique and that are not called something like Joan and Will and stuff, is something that we kind of touched on earlier, is something that Joss Whedon is doing with his cast of characters, and it's coming to light via the names too, is that the names are all very androgynous for a reason. So we don't have like...
Wait. Are you saying there's going to be like a gender swap episode?
I wish. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying...
Or that we're living in the gender swapped world right now and we'll find out.
Oh my God. That would be amazing. You just solved the show. No, what I'm saying is...
Wow, I should relate Twilight.
You should write fan fiction. But what I'm saying is like when you have Giles Milo and Sandra and Cordelia, they're sort of... The names are sort of a reflection of how the show doesn't just try to swap gender roles, but it almost kind of... erases gender a little bit sometimes. Like you'll see this in the episodes too, how it's like it's Willow who gets the punch to the face while Sander kind of gets the non-touch force knockout or whatever you called it, and it's how it's male virgins, not female virgins. And you know, you've got Sander in The Witch, Sander and Willow were called one of the girls and one of the guys respectively, and they're sort of setting up this very obvious, like, Willow is not the token girl and Sander is not the token guy, and they're more than their genders. And I think personally that the names are sort of help to blur the, like, making them people rather than making them genders. But also there's this very interesting juxtaposition between the very masculine name of Buffy, which is obviously a derivative of the word buff, and Angel, which is obviously a very feminine name. You know, you've got the tall, handsome, manly man, but when he's first described on the show, you know, Buffy calls him gorgeous and tells him he has a pretty name. You know, so it's sort of, it's all very intentional, and it does set up this equality and subversion of what you might expect, which I think is... it's just very important to keep in mind, and it's something that maybe gets overlooked when you are sort of watching the show for the first time. But and honestly, you get used to the names, like anything else. Like we got used to Hermione, you know, we'll get used to Willow and Xander.
I already kind of knew them all from fandom just in general, so it wasn't hard to like swallow them. Because Buffy has her own show, Angel has his own show, Willow's talked about a lot, mm-hmm. and Xander's kind of like a normal name already. So none of those really struck me as like, oh my gosh, only Cordelia. Cordelia still kind of feels like you must have been born in the 1800s or something.
Yeah, but she has posh parents, so there you go. Yeah. Or wannabe posh parents, rather. So moving into our... Unless you guys have anything else you want to say about the core four, then let's move into the favorite scenes from this episode. What's yours?
When do we call in the Scooby Gang? You said that they haven't called that yet.
Well,
and
yeah.
I didn't know they get called that in the show, so I just thought that was just a thing fandom came up with.
It may or may not happen later on. We'll okay. get to it when it does.
All right. I'm down for that.
Okay. Caitlin, what's your favorite scene?
Mine was just this small moment, like when they go to fight Miss French and she's in praying mantis form, and to distract her, Buffy grabs these two cans of bug spray and sprays them just to kind of like distract her while getting the recording ready. It just cracked me up, like the bug spray with the giant bug.
Yeah, mine is kind of along the same lines, like when she's playing the tape and it's like Giles's lecture. I love everything about that scene. It's so lame but so funny. What's yours, Brittany?
Mine is Xander watching Buffy and Angel talk in the bronze in the beginning of the episode because he's just like, oh great, this guy's back. And then when he like takes off his jacket and he's just like, how do you know he's off? Like all this stuff. It's just really funny.
Yeah. And Mitch, yours was the Poe Dameron moment.
Yeah. Just like in Star Wars, hashtag no spoilers, but getting a leather jacket from someone is, I mean, leather jackets are not inexpensive. I mean, even to like everlasting vampires, I'm sure. I mean, I get the impression Angel has only been turned somewhat recently. Like, and if he's really from like the 1800s or something, I'll be shocked, because he seems like he's still like a bumbling teenager.
It's a very intriguing relationship they're setting up, that's for sure. And the jacket sort of helps to establish that also Buffy is very intrigued, but despite his stupid advice and his complete lack of ability to actually help her out, there's clearly something about him that she finds attractive.
Which is when she's like, oh boy.
Yeah. So our favorite lines from this episode, Caitlin, what's yours?
Mine was Principal Flutie when he was trying to get Buffy to go see the grief counselor. He says, we all need help with our feelings. Otherwise, we bottle them up. And before you know it, powerful laxatives are involved. I really believe if we all reach out to one another, we can beat this thing. Uh-huh. I'm always here if you need a hug. But not a real hug, because there's no touching. The school is sensitive to wrong touching.
I like this quote. And you know what I like is too, is that it reminds me that this takes place in America, because on last week's podcast, they were sort of surprised that Giles was standing so close to his students. And I was just like, but that's totally normal. Like, people do that. And, you know, teachers can totally hug their students. And then I was like, oh, yeah, right, America.
There must be fan videos of Giles and Buffy, like, on YouTube, with people putting
song. There are.
Young girl, don't stand so close to me. You know,
there are definitely Buffy Giles fan videos for some bizarre reason that I'm not even going to quite, like, I don't even know.
It seems as innate as Buffy Cordelia to me. It really does.
Buffy Cordelia wouldn't be a problem with, but so that was a good line. And again, I'm a very big fan of Principal Flutie, so I appreciate moments like this. Brittany, what's yours?
Mine's another Xander quote. Says, it's funny how the earth never opens up and swallows you when you want it to.
Yeah. Oh,
he's
Xander.
Sort of like, it kind of goes into like his character. He's just like, well, I'm here in this world and I'm just going to make the best of it with my humor.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good descriptor. I have so much, I have a lot of love for Xander. And Mitch, yours is like my favorite song on the soundtrack. Oh my God.
Oh no. Oh no. I thought Karen was bad for her love of bad things.
Oh my God, the soundtrack is amazing.
Okay, so it's the song that plays when they're at the Bronze.
I already met you. It's a great song.
Okay, yeah. I mean, like, well, we can talk about the philosophy behind the song, maybe. But like, the lyrics go, and you just kind of have like a focus on this band that I know nothing about, so I won't harp on them too much because I could be offending a lot of people. Their lyrics go as follows. I'll let them speak for themselves. The first date's the worst date. It's hard to know just what to do. And I take you to dinner. You don't eat. You just play with your food. I mean, that's prolific, guys.
It's beautiful. It is. It
makes me tear up because I'm like, I've been there. That's the struggle. Yeah. You already met them, and that's why you're not playing. You're playing with your food because you're too much of an idiot to realize you're taking a person on a second date when it's your first in your mind. What? I don't.
Yeah, because people are all the same, and dating is stupid and pointless. And
it's deep.
Yeah.
The way they sing it too is just, you cannot get more 90s than this. You literally cannot.
You cannot.
Their hair,
I love it.
Their clothes,
much.
Their actions. The camera shots, everything.
Luckily for us, this was actually in the 90s, so I think they are excused. Seriously, though, the soundtrack to Buffy is a masterpiece. It's a work of art.
But now that you say you actually listen to it, I'm almost tempted to just prove to myself that I can like it too if I try hard enough. So maybe I can listen to it on repeat for like, you know, a couple times and then just see if I can really get into like the chorus or whatnot.
I defy you not to jam out to the song I Quit. It's very good.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, moving on. So my favorite line before we move on is Cordelia, who says she's in grief counseling, and she says, I'm not saying we should kill a teacher every day just so I can lose weight. I'm just saying that when tragedy strikes, we have to look on the bright side, like how even used Mercedes still have leather seats. So again, summing up a character in one quote. This is very Cordy. I very much appreciate this.
Cordy, I like that. That's cute.
Yeah. So
would the Buffy ship name be Bordy?
Bordy? Yeah. Or yeah, Cuffy? I don't know. Cordy.
Oh, Cuffy's kind of cute.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. Coffee it is. So we're going to move into some listener feedback now. And if you would like to send in your feedback about these two episodes of Buffy or about Rewatchable or about the episodes coming up, but no spoilers, you can email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at re_watchable. You can go to hypable.com, which is hypable.com, and find the podcast post. You go to the left-hand corner and click the little menu there and find the podcasts. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we are always looking for iTunes reviews, but we're only looking for 5 stars. So if you feel the need to give us those, then your reward will be Karen specially mailing you a medically necessitated lunch. And we'll also make sure to take the dead body out of the fridge before serving it to you. Wow, Karen is so helpful. It's amazing.
And thoughtful to take the dead body out.
Mm-hmm. So unless you're on a diet, of course, in which case I think you can like specify for the body to be left in there. Just let her know. And
we can kill a teacher for you to help out your diet if that's what you're looking for. Whatever.
We'll do anything for 5-star ratings, basically. So listener feedback from hypable.com. Our first comment is from Mark.
Sure. This is from Marco Lorenzo on Hypable's comments. He said, okay, I think what needs to be stressed to the newbies is that season 1 of Buffy is horrible compared to the rest of Buffy. Superfans can appreciate it because we're looking back at it knowing what's to come. Selena, you wrote back a lot to this guy too.
I did. I think Marco's point is very important. And if you are a superfan listening to the show and you're thinking, oh my God, they're going to hate my favorite show, then that's fair. But don't worry. It'll be fine. I mean, again, we've all seen these episodes. We've all experienced these feelings. We've all got it out of our system, and now we love the show. So I'm sure that these wonderful people will too, and otherwise it doesn't matter because we love it. So there you go. Our next comment is from Daniel. Caitlin, do you want to get it?
Sure. Daniel Stewart says, Cordelia was the same actress as Cougar's stepmom, Casablancas, on Veronica Mars, in addition to her recurring character on Charmed.
She was also on Supernatural.
She was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's been in a lot of stuff. Charisma Carpenter.
All CW shows, right?
Yeah, she's made the rounds. Yeah, you guys should remember her from Veronica Mars.
Yep.
So the next comment from Lucija, one of the two, she asks, is this a weekly podcast and will you be doing 2 episode reviews at once? Just so I know in order to keep up. Thanks. I guess yes and yes.
Yeah. No, we're sticking to the same Rewatchable format as far as I know. Caitlin, right?
Yep. 2 a week.
There we go. A week.
If there's a change in schedule, we'll let you know.
Yeah. Follow
me on Twitter. Oh, check out the Twitter in case, like, I don't think we've even missed a Sunday, like, ever. If we have, then, I mean, I'll gladly be wrong. But we're pretty consistent just on Sunday nights, so you have, like, a nice Monday morning commutes thing to listen to.
If we need to even things out and only do 1 episode a week or something, we will let you know ahead of time so you don't watch too many episodes.
Yeah.
And usually we talk about that, like, before we, like, when we're recording for the previous week so that you know what to get. Well, what homework to do for the next week. Mm-hmm. So you don't do too much homework.
And the good thing is we have so many hosts, so most of the time we'll be able to put a show together, even if someone's like away or something. So the next comment is from Laura Jurgensmeyer. Mitch, do you want to get it?
Sure. Laura says, Ariana, I know you've heard it from others, but I'm going to say it too. When I first heard of Buffy a few years ago, I found myself doing chores or reading things on the internet, or really anything I could do other than try to watch the first season of Buffy. I just couldn't get into it. I knew everyone loved it though, and had heard the first season was bad, so I pushed through. I ended up finishing the whole show in a few weeks and immediately started it over and watching it all the way through again. I'm now on my 4th rewatch with you guys, and it's in my top 5 favorite shows of all time.
That should be a good incentive to keep watching. Yeah, you know, I'm lucky because I said this in the intro show as well. I started watching Buffy in season 5, so I've never had to experience season 1 for the first time. You know, like by the time I went to see season 1, I was like, oh my God, you know, like these characters went from here to here. I had that moment. I think season 1 is much better on rewatch, which is maybe not a good thing, but again, you know, there's all the
hindsight is very
exactly like blind. all the reasons for not liking Buffy season 1 are valid, but you know, it's we've already given you lots of reasons why you should just chill and give it a chance. So Thanks for that comment, Laura. Scully Summers, I guess, Caitlin, you take that one.
Sure. So you guys' name discussion kind of sent me on a research spiral, and I tracked the popularity of the teenage Scoobies names in the U.S. through time, if anyone's interested. The name Buffy was in the top 1,000 between 1967 and 1977, peaking in 1972, 9 years before Buffy was born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, as someone whose name is Selena, which was popular in Britain in like the 1800s, I totally identify. So...
But, I mean, now you kind of have Selena Gomez.
Oh, my God, don't remind me.
That number, I'm sure.
Yeah, but at least it's spelled differently.
Yeah, it's true.
So we have Mariah Lovegood, who says, I thought Xander's question about the vamps flying was poking fun at the movie scene with a vamp floating outside a window.
It may very well have been.
Maybe. And then we have Zach H. Official, who changed his Twitter name to Jingle Bell Zach for the holiday season, who says, I'm only halfway through the first episode of Buffy, and I'm loving it. Wow, good for you. So excited for the rest of the series. As much as I'll miss the Cora era, I'm ready for the Buffy era.
Yes. If you enjoyed cheesy fun, you will. Yeah, I get that you'll love it. And our email from Beck, who has a great story about sharing special Buffy moments with her grandmother. Caitlin, do you want to get that one?
Sure. So she says, I have been a fan of Buffy since I was a teenager. At the time, I was looking after my grandma after school. She was suffering from dementia and was slowly losing more of herself, but she would sometimes watch Buffy with me. Watching TV would be strange with her because sometimes she would get upset when it was something realistic, like the news or anything that could be real. We would watch Buffy in the afternoon, though, and she quite enjoyed it. It was far enough out of reality that she saw the fun in it. Towards the end, she could not remember my name, but she would call me Buffy Girl instead.
Aww.
That would always make me smile. The first season has a few bumps, but once you're through it, it's one of the best shows out there. Looking forward to the show, Beck, a.k.a. Buffy Girl.
That's wonderful.
Thanks.
Yeah. I have so many... I don't know about you, Caitlin, but I have so many great memories of watching Buffy with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember when I first watched season 7, I was away at school, and me and like this girl, I was like, we were roommates, like 5 people in a room, and one of them we'd never talked before, and she was Spanish, and she didn't really speak English that well, and we couldn't really communicate. But then we discovered that we both liked Buffy, and we sat down like during a weekend and watched the entire season 7 together, and then we were like best friends. I was like, oh. Stories like that is great. See, Buffy is great, guys. We love it. Yay.
Together.
It does. Amazing. So thank you so much to everyone for listening to this week's episode of Rewatchable. The show will be back next week to talk about episodes 5 and 6. Some exciting episodes that I'm sad I won't be on to talk about because I would probably have a lot to say. But I'm sure the other hosts will do a wonderful job, and I can't wait to listen to the show. Until next time, my name's Selena.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Mitch.
Goodbye. Bug sandwich. Bye. I don't know how we end this. Let's go have a bug sandwich.